The reading is from Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 10 to 14, and then verses 22 to 26. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labour, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done, and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom, and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads, whilst fools walk in the darkness. But I came to realise that the same fate overtakes them both. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labour under the sun? All their days their work is grief and pain. Even at night their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless. People can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Thanks be to God for his word.
I can remember getting on a train at Preston Station to go to London. I remember the date simply because it was a leap year, so it was the 29th of February, 1980. And that night I stayed at a beautiful hotel just close to Heathrow Airport. The next day I boarded a Saudi Airlines flight to the Middle East to start a new job. At that time I wasn't a Christian. I was 25 years old and I was just really kind of grabbing life by the scruff of the neck, enjoying it and getting the most out of it that I could. And it was exhilarating, the sense of adventure. Waking up that morning, I remember, in a fascinating new culture, basically in the desert. And the company paying for me, a 25-year-old guy, to stay in these hotels, to fly me between Saudi and the UK via any European city I wanted, Amsterdam or Zurich or Paris, whatever you wanted, an offshore bank account. How cool was that for a young guy? And I really did feel like I'd made it. I thought that, you know, I discovered the secret of contentment, a contented and a successful life. I remember that's how I felt. I loved it. And then a year later, very sadly, my marriage just never saw it coming. It failed. And the money and the travel and the new house and the new car and the money in the bank meant, in the words of Ecclesiastes, it became meaningless. Literally, it did not mean a thing. And that happened overnight. And though that was a devastating experience at the time, I learned a vital lesson through it. I learned that contentment is not to be found in the pursuit of wealth or a career or pleasure or any such thing. And so the question that I have this morning is, how do each one of us ensure that we don't reach the end of our lives and be left with a nagging question? Was that it? What was life really all about? Did I miss something along the way? Because many people do get into later life, mid-years, later life, even onto the deathbed, and thinking, what was life all about? Well, the writer of Ecclesiastes, it shows us in chapter 2 where to look and where not to look for the answers to life. So where do human beings typically search for fulfillment and contentment? Because we all do it. The writer of Ecclesiastes suggests that there are four ways, four places really, that we look, and all of them ring true to our own experience. So firstly, he says, through the accumulation of wealth. Now that is nothing new. You hear people today say, if only I could win the lottery just once, I would have it made. I would be content. Well, a lady who did get rich overnight, she won, as it was then, the football pools, predicting football scores, was a lady called Viv Nicholson back in 1961. So I was only a very small boy then, I hasten to add, but I still remember Viv Nicholson. She won the equivalent of $3.5 million today. And when she was asked what she was going to do with it, she famously replied, I'm going to spend, spend, spend. She was kind of caught on the hop by a reporter. She said, there I was, sat on this train, wearing a borrowed pair of tights off my sister, and this microphone thrust in my face. What are you going to do with it? She said, I'm going to spend, spend, spend. And that's exactly what she did. And within 4 years, it had all gone, completely gone. And she ended up where she couldn't even afford to pay for the funeral of her fourth husband. She ended up working in a strip club to the song of Hey, Big Spender. They're kind of making fun of her, I guess, by that stage. And Viv Nicholson's picture appeared on the front cover of a Smiths single, Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now. It kind of summed up her life. And for Viv Nicholson and many, many people like her, wealth did not lead to contentment. Just the opposite. It completely destroyed her life. She didn't know how to handle it. She didn't have people around her to care and to guide her. And Jesus said this. He said, don't store up for yourselves riches on earth, where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And then Jesus said this. He said, seek first the kingdom of God, and all these other things will be added to you as well. Seek first the kingdom of God. C.S. Lewis said it slightly differently. He says, aim for heaven and you get earth thrown in. Aim for earth and you get neither. And that is the first clue as to where our search for contentment and fulfillment and the meaning of life begins. Seek first God's kingdom. I wish I'd known that a long time ago. A second road that many people will explore in a search for fulfillment and contentment is entertainment. So that could be anything in the range from appreciation of the arts to getting legless on a Saturday night. And that includes drink and drugs and gambling and sex. And yet, ironically, countless number of people have discovered they are more miserable as a result through rejection and loneliness and an utter sense of means nothing, it is meaningless. And modern society, I think, has largely bought into a hedonistic lifestyle where eat, drink and be merry because tomorrow you die. That is the modern day philosophy. But tragically, entertaining ourselves to death is not the way to find contentment and purpose and meaning. So a third avenue that people explore, a third road they go down, is to immerse themselves in education and academia. Back in 1860, an English philosopher called Jeremy Bentham said, if we can only get universal and compulsory education by the end of this century, all our social, political and moral problems will be solved. So if only we can get universal and compulsory education by 1900, that will eliminate all of our social, political and moral problems. But education without values, said C.S. Lewis, only makes us more clever devils. I think there's such a truth in that. The Apostle Paul pointed out in a letter to Timothy how the human race is always learning but never able to acknowledge the truth. You see it, don't you? We've made almost a god of education. We're always learning. Some great academics. C.S. Lewis himself was an avowed atheist, a great intellect, very, very sharp. And as Paul says, we're always learning but never able to acknowledge the truth. Paul put education and human intellect in a right perspective when he asked the question, where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? Jews demand miraculous signs. Greeks look for wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, which is a stumbling block for Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. And then he finishes by saying, the foolishness of God is wiser than man's wisdom. Again, another major clue as to where our search for meaning and fulfillment and contentment begins, in really seeking out God's wisdom on anything and everything. The Russian author Tolstoy, he wrote what Encyclopedia Britannica describes as one of the three greatest novels in world literature, War and Peace. But even a brilliant scholar like Tolstoy was brought to the verge of suicide by one nagging question. He said, is there any meaning in my life which won't be annihilated by the inevitability of death? Is there any meaning to my life that won't be annihilated by the inevitability of death? He had immersed himself in education, academia. He wrote one of the three greatest novels in the world, and yet it left him none the wiser about the meaning and purpose of life, and left him still discontented. And then fourthly, some having exhausted their search for contentment through wealth, through entertainment, through education, they then, kind of as a last resort, turn their attention to some kind of achievement. They look for some kind of a legacy that they can leave behind after they've died. Some great work, some philanthropy, just to try and leave something after their life. One example is Bill Gates. He's reputed to be the richest man in the world. And Bill Gates has invested more than 250 million of his own personal wealth to try and discover a vaccine that will eliminate malaria. Now that is he wants to leave something lasting. Although he's made all this money, made a big mark, he wants to leave a lasting legacy. Now that is an extreme example maybe, but it illustrates the fact that people who become disillusioned with wealth and entertainment and education often search for meaning then in some sense of achievement and contentment by investing in something that will last beyond death. The trouble is, said the Apostle Paul, we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of the world. Someone put it less eloquently, but very bluntly, they said, there are no pockets in a shroud. And that is so true. The evangelist J. John overheard someone at a funeral ask the question, did the deceased leave much? And the answer came back quick as a flash, yes, he left everything. And the writer of Ecclesiastes said, I amassed silver and gold, wealth. I applied myself to study, education. I said to myself, come, I will test you with pleasure, entertainment, and I undertook great projects, achievement. And after doing all that, he asked the question, what more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? Saying, me, with all that wealth, all that wisdom, I've done all of these things, who follows me can do more than that? And yet, we are still trying by the same means 3,000 years later. You know, Sir Bob Geldof, who is reputed to have amassed a personal fortune of £45 million in excess of, that was in 2006, at the end of one of his concerts, he overheard someone in the crowd say, is that it? And Bob Geldof said, I keep asking myself the same question. And when he was asked by a Times reporter, "Are you fulfilled?" Bob Geldof says, "No, not at all." He said, "I am not fulfilled as a human being. Otherwise, why are these large holes in here?" he said as he was pointed to his chest. He said, "I stay active, frenetically so, and that freneticism allows me to think that I'm not wasting time." So he keeps busy to stop himself thinking that he's not wasting time. He's wealthy, he's famous, but in the words of his fellow countryman and musician Bono, he still hasn't found what he's looking for. You know, we can give the impression, I think, to our kids sometimes that education is the most important thing. Allied to that, we can give the impression that getting a high-earning job with high-earning potential is the most important thing. Have you noticed that our shopping precincts are looking more and more like modern-day cathedrals? And I think maybe is that because we've made a god of consumerism and materialism? We've made a god of entertainment too. You know, if ever there's a conflict between sport and God, it is always God who gets relegated. And the irony of all of this is not only are all those things that I've mentioned good and to be enjoyed, not only that, but God has given them to us to bless us and for our enjoyment, but we can only do that when we put God in his rightful place in our lives. It's true what what Augustine wrote 1500 years ago when he said about God, "You have made us for yourself, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." Again, it's just a simple statement, but it's so true. Lord, you've made us for yourself, and our heart is restless until it finds rest in you. So if you are tired of searching for rest and contentment, if you feel like that hamster on the wheel, not only has the writer of Ecclesiastes narrowed the search down, we stand on the threshold of entering into it. Maybe you wouldn't describe yourself as a Christian. Maybe you're just an honest, hard-working person doing the best that they can. And yet something about the experience of the writer of Ecclesiastes rings true with you. Wealth, entertainment, education, achievement still leaves you searching for meaning. And at the end of chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes, he says, "Without God, who can find enjoyment? God gives wisdom and happiness." So how do we receive it? That's the question. By admitting that so far we've got it wrong. By acknowledging that you want God's help. By inviting Jesus to be Lord of your life. And if you're sincere and it's a prayer from the heart, he will do it. And if you allow him first place in your life, you will experience a peace and a contentment and a purpose to life that you never thought possible. They say that if history teaches us anything, it's that history doesn't teach us anything at all. In other words, we don't learn from the past. Those words from Ecclesiastes have been around 3,000 years. Jesus' teaching has been around 2,000 years. And I find it kind of tragic in a way that those words of life were sitting in a Bible on a book in my house as I grew up, kind of just at arm's length, and yet, strangely, just out of reach. And so you go through life as best you can and make the mistakes that you do. And then, as I say, we just don't learn from it. We're still trying to do things our way as if there is something new under the sun. But from now on, life can be different. We can choose to seek God's kingdom first. We can put God first in everything. And as we do, we'll discover that contentment and that meaning and that purpose that we never thought possible. So just in closing, the Apostle Paul said, I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. I can do everything through Christ who strengthens me.